The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this November 4th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. It's a nice, beautiful day in Auburn, Alabama, but here we go again. We thought last week was something special. We took it all in, we celebrated, and we embraced the winning ways. And we thought, oh, here we go. We'll just build on this, right? Auburn's going to be fine. Auburn's going to build on it. They're going to, you know, they're going to continue to do the winning things and live by the winning way. And no. It was fun while it lasted, though. Yeah, we had a good time a week ago, and here we are now as we get into a bye week. We get to talk about yet again another loss for 2 weeks now this time because we have to wait for the next game to come by. Phone lines are already lighting up. We're going to get to those in just a little bit. Hope y'all had a good weekend other than Auburn embarrassing themselves against Vanderbilt on Saturday. I won't get into details, but it's a miracle that I'm sitting here today on a Monday because this weekend I caught something, some sort of a virus, some sort of a bug. I don't know what it was, but my goodness, it knocked me out cold for 2 days. Just couldn't move, was miserable. I mean, just sick as a dog.
What'd you catch, Jabba?
Yeah, something like that. It hit me and Auburn pretty hard, apparently. So I'm thankful that I'm here today. Still not 100%, but good enough to be in here. And look, you can't miss shows like this because there's just so much to get to and so much to break down. And so phone lines are wide open today. You can be a part of the show. 334-321-1390. Give us a call. Come on in. We know you got thoughts. We know you have something to say from what happened in Auburn's 17-7 loss over the weekend. I'm Jacob Goins alongside me in the studio as he is every Monday and Friday. He's wild. He's crazy. He may have something to say today is Uncle T-Bone. What's up, man? How are you? Happy Monday.
I'm good. Happy Monday, Jacob. The phone lines are already lighting up, and you can get in to 334-321-1390 or text us at the text hotline 334-784-1067. And you can tell us how you feel about that embarrassing debacle of a loss against Vanderbilt this past weekend inside Jordan-Hare Stadium, 17-7. And let's just jump right to it. Jacob, who we got?
We got a guy who's all the way down Highway 14, down in Lochapoca. Lonnie, what's up, my man? How are you on this Monday?
Well, I'm doing good on this Monday, but I'll tell you what. That was the first game that I've been to in a little while. And I took my son on Saturday, and I think that's about the eighth game that I've taken my son to in probably the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. Do you know how many times my son has seen Auburn win inside Jordan-Hare Stadium?
Out of 8 tries, my guess is 2.
Try 1.
Gosh.
Yeah.
So your son's the problem.
Well, you know what? Me trying to make him a huge Auburn fan is pretty tough right now because his mother pulls for Alabama, and it's pretty hard for me to turn the tide, without using a better phrase than that. It's pretty hard for me to battle that when they're doing what they do and we do what we do.
Sure. How old's your son, Lonnie?
He's 13.
13, yeah, that's a ripe age to start making a decision. And to try and be an Auburn fan at that age, especially like in school and stuff like that, when Auburn's just playing so bad week in and week out, I mean, that's brutal, man. There ain't no doubt about it.
I think he was born in 2011, and I think his entire life, he can probably remember Alabama losing maybe six or seven times, and that's about it.
Mm. And Auburn winning about six or seven times. Lonnie, let's jump right to it. First of all, how was the game experience?
Okay, so we had really good seats. I was able to get some good seats on StubHub. But I don't know what has happened. There's a couple of things that I've got major issues with. I'm starting to think that scoreboard that we put up, either it's the scoreboard or it's the people running it, people are more interested in getting their face on the scoreboard than they are cheering for the team and paying attention to the game. It's a complete distraction. Yes, it looks good and all of that, but I don't know. It's just – it's Jordan-Hare Stadium is – I would argue that right now Jordan-Hare Stadium is about as intimidating as Ole Miss. Well, I mean, excuse me, as Mississippi State, if not less.
Well, I mean, can we finally stop with all the talk that we had to hear after all these years? And one of the few things we left had a leg standing on was how intimidating Jordan-Hare Stadium is, because, quite frankly, they haven't beat a ranked team there, I don't think, since Harsin's first year when Lane Kiffin came at number 10 with Ole Miss to town on Halloween night.
I'll tell you this. The fans were there. The fans showed up, did their job. I thought the fans were pretty loud. You know, and outside of the Jokers not paying attention to the game in the student section trying to get their face on TV, I thought the crowd, for the most part, was pretty good.
I'll say this, Lonnie, and I'm as guilty as anybody. I don't care about getting my face on the Jumbotron, the old J-tron, but I do find myself way too many times watching it and watching the game up there while plays are happening.
Well, even bigger, this is actually the biggest issue to me of all, aside from the scoreboard, aside from the team, you know, losing a game that was easily winnable. I don't see how people afford to go in there. I mean, I got a High Noon, which is a 12-ounce, you know, little
cold
drink.
Snack, got you.
Thing's about $12, ain't it?
And a Michelob Ultra, and it was $22.
Ooh, you can get a 12, you can get a 24-rack for that, can't you?
I mean, and it's not just that. It's like everything in there is so expensive. If we would have spent, let's say, I'm trying to think, just for me and my son to go to the game, tickets and everything. Now, we did have seats where we had free food, but had we not had that, I would have easily spent close to $400.
Golly.
That something has got to change. I'm telling you right now, I'm not going back. I'm not.
You hear that, Auburn Athletic Department? Lonnie from Lochapoca says he's done. He's through. Your prices are too high.
Can't afford it. And I don't understand. I don't see how anybody else, you know, that's not somebody who's just absolutely loaded, I don't see how they afford it either.
And you're paying that for a losing effort, Lonnie. That makes it even worse.
Yep.
What about the game, Lonnie, real quick?
Well, I thought the defense, as I have said time and time again, defense played well enough to win. They've played well enough to win all year long. I am absolutely clueless what we are doing on offense. And if Hugh Freeze thought in the offseason, if he evaluated Peyton Thorne and he thought that guy was the answer, we've got some serious, serious issues.
There you go. I agree with you, Lonnie. We appreciate the call, my friend. Always good to hear from you. Appreciate you listening and being a loyal part of the program. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. You can shoot me a text in the on-the-line text box as well, 334-784-1067. We'll get to some of those. Total disaster on the Plains from a football perspective, says one person. Hoops on Wednesday, though. You got 3-9 in football. 4 years I've been coming to Auburn, and it's all a mess.
Jacob, $21 for a high nooner and a cold snack inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. Why is anybody surprised? Somebody's got to pay that over $37 million in buyouts between Gus Malzahn and Brian Harsin. It's sure not going to be the people who hired them.
And the way we're going right now, you're going to be paying a third buyout if you're not careful with the things, how they're going right now. And got another text that said, and unfortunately, this is the way that it goes. If people and the good folks like Lonnie are not willing to pay the $22 for two drinks, guess what? Somebody else will. That's why prices are high. That's why prices go up. That's why they can charge that much, because there are enough people that will pay it. Not the average Joe, right? Not the normal citizen, but somebody will pay it. But I think to Lonnie's point before we get back to the phone lines is people are tired of paying that amount of money to watch the team lose. If you're supporting a winning team and a winning program, you can swallow that $25 you spent for a cold beer when you watch your team if they're out there beating Vanderbilt, not when they're losing to Vanderbilt. That beer tastes like crap when you lose. And then you got to go, well, I paid $25 to sit here and drink this drink, not on top of your ticket prices or the parking or anything like that. People will pay to see your team win. They don't want to pay to see your team lose.
Agreed.
334-321-1390. Let's get back to the phone lines. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with?
This is Jeremy.
Jeremy, what's up, man? What's on your mind?
Man, what's going on? Man, I'm just sitting there at the game, man. I agree with Lonnie, man. I think too many people are just trying to get on that Jumbotron and wanting to dance. And I think they were more worried about showing the guy who was in the north end zone the north end zone crane cab, him standing out on the crane, than they were showing things about the football game. It's ridiculous.
And what's crazy about that is everybody knows now Auburn's adding a second one, right? They're putting one on the other end of the stadium, too. Believe it's going to be a little bit shorter, but a little bit longer than the one that currently stands.
Absolutely. Man, I've got a condo down there right as close to the stadium as you can get, and I'm not even going back. And I got a place to park and stay anytime, and I'm not going back.
Well, you let me know. I'll gladly take that off your hands.
I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks so much for the call. That's I'll be honest.
Yeah, I think you're onto something here.
That's the first time I've heard of this, and this, I guess it's a complaint, right? And we appreciate the call, guys. That's the first time I've really heard this concern, Uncle T-Bone, about Auburn fans not being engaged in the game. They're more worried about the Jumbotron, and they're more worried about anything else that's happening. And I'll give you a perfect reason why. There's nothing to be engaged with.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you got a head coach and offensive staff who's only going to give Jarquez Hunter the ball twice in the second half, I'm going to stop watching too.
I mean, and now, you know, they put other highlights up there and they play other games and they give score updates and things like that.
A lot of good football around the country, not being played at Auburn, though.
Yeah, and I think that's a big reason why you're seeing people and fans in the stadium play on their phones and look up other games and, heck, probably betting on other games and doing whatever they can to distract themselves from what's happening in front of their eyes. And think about all the fans at home. I mean, I pose this question to all of you Auburn fans, whether you listen to the game, watch the game, or do a combination of both. How many other games do you have on any given Saturday, even when Auburn's playing, right? In this day and age, you can watch anywhere from 2 to 8 games at one time. How many Auburn fans simply have one TV on with the Auburn game and that's it, right? That's how it was when I was growing up because that's all there was, right? But now you can watch as many games and listen to as many games as possible. How many Auburn fans have other games on and find yourself watching the other games more than you do Auburn? Because of what's been happening over the past year and a half.
How many Auburn fans right now have Leave It the Beaver on instead of watching Auburn football when they're on? I mean, that's what it sounds like to me where we're going. I mean, I can't tell you, Jacob. I can tell you this. Auburn fans are very upset for good reason. The text and calls, I know you were under the weather and weren't really able to participate this weekend after our show on Game Day on Wings, but the texts and calls I took and have taken for the last 48 hours, they've been brutal. People have had enough. And these type of phone calls are indicative of that. These aren't bad fans saying, I'm done, I'm not ever coming back. We've lost one too many times. They're just sick and tired of being sick and tired. This has been going on now for years. It's an Auburn problem at this point now within that football program, exasperated by poor play calling, poor offensive strategy, not utilizing your personnel, and this is the same old broken record that's been going round and round for 5 years, folks. Fact.
Yeah, I was under the weather. I felt terrible this weekend, and it wasn't because of Auburn football, but it very well could have been. Auburn loses to Vanderbilt 17-7. 17-7, Auburn loses to Vanderbilt inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium. We're just underway on the Monday edition of On the Line. Get in here. We know you got thoughts. 334-321-1390. Or you could shoot us a text in the On the Line text box, 334-784-1067. Full breakdown and reactions as we move along here on ESPN 1067.
You are on the line on ESPN 1067. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back to the phone lines here on ESPN 1067. You can be a part of it, 334-321-1390. K-Bag, you're on the line, man. What's up?
I want to start by saying something positive about our football team.
Okay.
Thank God for DJ Durkin and Charles Kelly. Because if we didn't have them, we'd be getting beat by 40.
Let me tell you what. I got to thinking about this on the way over, K-Bag, and I totally agree with you. What if we had a competent offense right now? Would that be one of the top 10 defenses in the country? I mean, they play ridiculous amount of minutes, especially late in the game. How good would they be if our offense was actually ringing people up and they could really dial it up?
How good could we be if our offense looked like they knew what they were doing?
Mm-hmm.
You look at our offense on Saturday and the production and the body language and how they were, running around on the field, and you compare that with Vanderbilt and how much moxie and dog that they had in their offense. And you tell me just by looking at that, which one was the better football team?
Well, I mean, they have just so – it's the thing we talked about on Friday is Vanderbilt has confidence, right? Vanderbilt has confidence that they can get it done. Even when they're not playing at their best, they think they can do it, and they know that they have the ability. I think this Auburn offense – Even before or after the Kentucky game, they knew they didn't have it. They've known they haven't had it, and they have no confidence that it's going to turn up anytime soon.
I wonder what really is going on at practice at this point in time.
Do they practice?
It's amazing to me that we can just miss wide open receivers 25 yards down the field. Luke Deal.
It's just
completely – he had no chance to catch the football.
Are they throwing at practice every single day and getting their timing down? Are they even practicing every day on offense?
But the problem is some of the missed throws that Peyton's having are not timing issues. It's just straight up missing. They're accuracy issues. And guess what? You've played college football for 17 years. You're not going to get better now.
I got to believe he wasn't this inaccurate at Mississippi State.
Michigan State.
Michigan State, excuse me.
Was he? When
he came up out of the portal, like when they did the pros and cons.
No, I'm pretty sure he had like a 65% completion percentage, if not better.
Sometimes inaccurate, misses open throwers. crawls his back up when someone's 2 yards from him in the pocket, like he's a scared little girl. Were those the cons? I think that most of these issues have just really revealed themselves at Auburn. And the biggest issue I have about it here at Auburn, guys, is that this isn't a first-year transfer guy in a new system. He's been here 2 years now and gotten worse. How is that possible?
Well, I've never – subscribe to the thought process that it's time to turn the page within a season until this year. We have, there is anybody who thinks that we can go out and beat an extremely competitive Louisiana Monroe team and beat a Texas A&M team that's going to come to Jordan-Hare with something to prove and something to play for in a New Year's Bowl, Day Bowl, or either possibly an SEC championship at that point in time, and then much less go into Bryant-Denny Stadium at night and beat Alabama? It is time to say, we appreciate it, Peyton. You're still going to get the rest of your $750,000 that we owe you on your NIL deal. But it is time for the vast majority of these unproductive seniors to quit talking about building a program from the bottom, Hugh. We got to start winning football games, and winning next year starts today with gaining experience for younger players who are going to be able to make contributions moving forward.
There you go. K-Bag, always appreciate the time, my friend. Appreciate you listening and calling in. 334-321-1390. Multiple things that I want to address here that we don't have time for in this segment, but we'll carry over into the next segment, which there's also a text box with a coaching recommendation in the text box. We're going to get to that as we go today as well. I think I have to start with the defense because Hugh Freeze did not have a presser today because it's a bye week. Funny how that worked out. And I was going to ask him the question. And for those of you that know me and know my role in this media world, in this town, right? I don't care. I will ask the questions that need to be asked. And look, Hugh Freeze, I have openly said this on the airwaves several times. He has been one of the most open and just, I don't know, refreshing coaches to cover in terms of asking him things in the media, because most of the time he'll tell you what you want to know, right? The results haven't been what we wanted. But my question to him today was going to be simply, Coach, how do you address your defense when in every game this season, except maybe one, they have played good enough to win? They have put a winning effort on the field, but your offense has not backed them up. What do you tell them? How do you address them when they have put a winning effort on the field every single time, except maybe the Georgia game where that one just got out of hand late, but your offense cannot back them up? Because I want to remind people what Auburn's defense has done this season. Let me remind everybody in case you forgot, right? 3 points against Alabama A&M, 21 against Cal, 19 against New Mexico, 24 against Arkansas. Oklahoma scored 27, but one of those touchdowns was a pick six that sealed the game, right? Mm-hmm. Georgia scored 31. Okay, fine. Missouri, 21. Kentucky, 10. And Vanderbilt, 17. Do any of those numbers scream, defense just got blasted, defense just got burned, defense needs to be better? No. Even 31 points against Georgia is still not terrible, but your offense scored 13. This is historically one of the worst offenses I've ever seen at Auburn in terms of just flat out scoring the ball, putting it into the end zone, heck, making field goals. And we love Towns Magoo, but dude, something's got to change. Something's not right over there. And so that was going to be my question to him today is, how do you address this defense in the locker room? What do you do if you're DJ Durkin? You go to your guys and say, look, I don't know what to tell you. We're doing our job.
He's a pro, and he's going to keep being a pro coach and being professional.
Durkin?
Yeah, to his players. He's going to tell them, you keep grinding and you keep doing your job. Now, what he says to the what the coaches say to one another privately is probably a little different story. What I'm interested in is that question, but what was said immediately after the game in this locker room. Because I'm of the understanding from some comments from Hugh Freeze mm-hmm. after the game that the defense had some very strong words.
As they should.
And I don't blame them. But let me ask you this question. I'm going to go through two teams statistically, and you tell me which team you think won. Team A has 327 total yards, 239 passing, 88 rushing, and 5.6 yards per play. Team B has 227 total yards, 143 passing, 84 rushing, and 3.7 yards per play. Which team won the game?
Team B, unfortunately.
Team B was Vanderbilt. I tell you, at game day on wings, Jacob, before this game, right? Jacob, Vandy's going to have 227 total yards. What do you tell me?
Auburn wins.
One team did not play very well, A, because they didn't have their best game, B, because the defense they went up against is nasty in DJ Durkin, and yet they still had the confidence and guts and grit to get the job done. And that's something that this offense, and quite frankly, this offensive staff, in my opinion, have confident guts and grit. They don't have it. When you, oh, well, they were loading the box. We couldn't run much. Jarquez Hunter, who had, you know,
he looked
12 carries for 50 yards. He's got backups if he's gassed. Run the ball and play action out of it. Guy goes for 15 on the first carry. They take him out the next play. There's no confidence in that offense.
None. I mean, it's negative.
I got another thing I'm going to tell you before the break. Last year, Phillip Montgomery, offensive coordinator, caught a lot of crud. Auburn averaged 24 points a game against Power 4 teams in the regular season. This year, it's 16. Who's calling the plays now? Jimmy Montgomery?
8-point difference from last year to this year in terms of Auburn scoring against Power 4 opponents. That's just one side of the many sides of this conversation. I want to talk about quarterbacks and why Auburn has just been a death trap for them recently. We'll talk about that when we come back on the Monday edition of On the Line.
On the Line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. Across from me is Uncle T-Bone. Phone lines are open today, 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text in the On the Line text box, 334-784-1067. And I want to look at Peyton Thorne, right? Because you look at his performance Saturday, and when you just look at the stats, right? Just the stats on paper for Peyton Thorne. 20 of 29, 239 yards, one touchdown, and no interceptions.
It's not bad.
Is that a losing effort on paper? I don't think so. Is it necessarily a winning effort? I don't know. You tell me. I think on paper, that's more of a winning effort than it is a losing effort. No turnovers, right? 20 of 29, what is that statistically? 20 of 29 is 68%, 69% completion percentage, 240 yards and a touchdown. On paper, good enough to win, right?
Diego Pavia, the winning quarterback, 9 for 22, 143, two touchdowns.
Exactly. But the problem now, which is so crazy because we would have, man, after the California game, Auburn fans would have paid for this stat line from Peyton Thorne. Would have paid that $25. Instead of buying a couple of beers at the stadium, they would have taken that $25 and they would have paid for this stat line from Peyton Thorne. Why? Because we would have said if you play that way, Auburn wins the game. But that's not the case. Right? Because it's now the problem isn't turning the football over. The problem now is not hitting open receivers and drives that start out good, right? Picking up a few first downs, they just stall out. They blow a tire. You get around midfield and they say, oh, well, that didn't work. We'll punt it away. Go ahead. And they move on. And it's taking sacks and it's making the wrong decisions. And again, not hitting open receivers. And I pose this question to you, Uncle T-Bone, and to everybody listening. Has Peyton Thorne gotten better since he got to Auburn? Or has he gotten worse? Has he gotten better or worse? I don't think he stayed stagnant. Some people may say that, and I guess that's an option. Has he gotten better, worse, or stayed the exact same since the two years he's been here?
I'm going to say statistically on paper he's probably better, but he's gotten worse because the team's gotten worse record-wise, and the offense has obviously gotten worse.
And that leads into my next point. I've been on this train for quite some time, as long as I've been on the radio and even before then, that Auburn football, since 2010, maybe even before, but definitely since Cam Newton walked off this campus, Auburn football has been a place that quarterbacks go to die. Tell me a quarterback since 2010 that showed up on campus that got better over his time and walked out of here a better quarterback because he came to Auburn. Can you give me one?
Malik Willis. Get you some of that.
And that wasn't even because of Auburn. That's because he went to somewhere else.
Man, I don't know.
Give me a quarterback that came to Auburn and walked out of here better after his time here, not because he went somewhere else.
You know, it's hard for me to
I don't think that say, guy exists.
Yeah.
Barrett Trotter? No. Clint Mosley? No. Kyle Frazier? No. Yeah. Nick Marshall? He was great when he got here.
I mean, he was what he was when he got here.
And he didn't get better as a quarterback. I mean, he went to the NFL as a DB.
And they tried to change him, the offense up a little bit in, midway through his second year, and he got worse.
Jeremy Johnson showed up as Mr. Alabama football and was the biggest flop in the history of high school or in the history of college football.
I'm going to tell you, that guy in high school was unstoppable.
Mr. Alabama football. And he walked into here like a deer in headlights, and again, it was the biggest flop in the history of the sport. Sean White? No. Jarrett Stidham is the prime example that I always go back to. I will never understand, till the end of time, why Jarrett Stidham left Baylor, hit the transfer portal, and said, you know where I'm going to go to better my quarterbacking career? I'm going to go to Auburn. Why in the world did you do that? It's a miracle this guy's playing on Sundays and even has a career in the NFL. He did not get better when he was here. He got worse. He left a passing league, a passing team, to come to Auburn where they ran Kerryon Johnson into the ground. Bo Nix? No. He got better in 1 year at Oregon versus the three that he was here in Auburn. TJ Finley? That was embarrassing. Robbie Ashford? Okay. And here we are with Peyton Thorne. Since 2010, there has not been a single quarterback that has walked in here and gotten better because they came to Auburn. And Peyton Thorne is the next prime example of that. And I hate that because Peyton Thorne showed a ton of promise. A ton of promise and could have been good here. And it just didn't work out.
Man, that is a painful, painful, painful theory to try and digest right now. There's not enough cold snacks in Milwaukee for me to put that one on ice, I can tell you that. I want to get to back to the game itself a little bit. I'm sure Spectre will get to you here shortly. One of the narratives that I'm hearing post-game is that Vanderbilt was in a bear defense, and they were basically playing goal line and begging Auburn to run, and we just couldn't run it on them. And that's why we don't stop running ball, Uncle T-Bone. I mean, can't you see? Don't you know ball? They weren't going to let us run. Well, outside of Peyton Thorne and the one time he tried to run Malcolm Simmons, which was a disaster, Auburn had 20 carries for 97 yards to their running backs. Jarquez Hunter, 12 carries, 50 yards. That's 4.2 average. Jeremiah Cobb, 4 carries, 28 yards, 7 yards a carry. Why not give it to him 8 times? Damari Austin, 5 carries for 19 yards, 3.8 yards per carry. When Auburn was running the football with the tailbacks, they were getting almost 5 yards a carry. So stop saying that they couldn't run on Vandy. That is dishonesty.
And I feel, too, it just seems that in the game, right, Auburn will run the ball, they'll get some big chunk plays, they'll get those 4 and 5 yard carries, but as soon as the defense stops them, right, as soon as they lose yards on a running play, they
Well, can't do
they
that
get
anymore.
Scared. Yep. Oh, psh, all right. They stopped it. Got to move on. Can't do that anymore.
Let's run a play where no one gets open, and we'll run all our receivers into a zone. Spectre, my man, what's up?
Well, guys, another day, Groundhog Day, right?
That's right.
Refuse to win, buddy. Refuse to win.
Absolutely refuse to win. Well, let me say something about the Jarrett Stidham and Bo Nix era here. Jarrett Stidham came into Auburn at the beginning of our decline at the offensive line. Enter Bo Nix. The man was getting killed. He did the best he could. And I believe it until somebody tells me different, that he left Auburn because he was just sick and tired of the offensive line. But with that being said, now, the Vanderbilt game. Did y'all notice something different in between the Kentucky game and the Vanderbilt game on the offense?
In terms of?
Plays. We did not have the two tight ends as H-backs.
Mm, yeah.
We had one every now and then, but he would go out and just miss his block altogether.
Yeah, would peel out and go after the block on the outside. Yep.
Hmm.
Yeah. Remember when Deal was in the backfield next to Stidham on the right and Hunter was on the left?
Yeah.
The play was made. Hunter went to the right, and Deal thought he was going, I don't know what he was thinking, but he was trailing Hunter. He should have been ahead of Hunter.
Correct.
And so I don't know if that was a mix-up in the play or he didn't know how to run it, but the whole game, I kept looking. I said, when are they going to put the two tight ends in as H-backs? That's where we did our most productive running against Kentucky, and it never happened.
Yeah, I mean, you just get the extra blocker in there, and a lot of times with that tight end, Spectre, they don't even pick up on the first level. They're getting that block on the second level, right? They're getting past that line, and they're picking up that secondary dude, and then you break open for a big run.
Absolutely. Now, if you got the two H-back tight ends, if you're going to the left, that means the one on the right could go out for the pass. But,
there's a lot you can run play action out of multiple tight end sets. It's something for quite some time, especially under Brian Harsin, I didn't understand Auburn did more of because we had so many tight ends.
Yeah, Harsin
on
actually
the roster
used tight
then,
ends,
and
yeah.
He used them, and we still didn't use them as often as we should. And Spectre, I've got an old friend of mine to tell me this saying. I hope you'll agree. The tight end is always open.
Yes. Well, look, shoot. I get to talking so fast I can't think of people's names. Peyton absolutely overthrew Deal wide open.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't expect him to get open, I guess. I don't know.
I just don't think
he didn't
make the
just
throw.
Miss him. He missed him by a boat length. He
didn't even give him a chance to catch the ball.
I mean, that guy was wide open, and that was a well-designed play. Some of the few I've seen pass-wise this year. And, no, we're just going to put that one basically in the cheap seats.
What happened to our other kicker? I thought he was coming back this week.
McPherson, that was the expectation, but didn't seem to come to fruition.
Wow. What is wrong with him anyway?
Just internal health issues is what they keep classifying it as. And there for a while, it got pretty serious. Like, it got, like, really serious there for a while, and they felt that he was getting better. And I think from a day-to-day life, he's probably getting better, but in terms of, you know, being physical and out there making kicks, I just don't think he's ready yet.
Wasn't there a walk-on kicker that came from Birmingham Southern after their football program disbanded that's on the roster now?
Give him a chance.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they can go get one of those kids who kicks at game day.
Those kids are terrible.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
All right, guys. We got 2 weeks to talk about it.
Unfortunately. Thanks so much, Spectre. Hey, and I did see your text this weekend, so it was a very well thought out text from Spectre that broke it all down from his perspective. So we appreciate the call, 334-321-1390. And the text message we got earlier, it says, gentlemen, two words, Kurt Cignetti.
Well, I think it's a little premature for that, but I would like to talk about when we come back from break the uncharted waters that this coaching staff is in record-wise. I've pulled some numbers over the weekend. I'd like to share them with everyone.
We'll do that when we come back. We'll wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
All right, wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. And you know times are dire when Uncle T-Bone whips out the old computer. He goes to the office. He whips up the old dial-up. He gets the tone going. It takes his computer about 30 minutes to get going. But he starts typing into the old Google, and he starts pulling up some statistics. And so what do you got, my man?
Once that computer gets warmed up, you better watch out. You can get over to RadioFreeAuburn.com. That's RadioFreeAuburn.com. Go down to blog, stagnant offense with no identity, dooms Tigers. There's some stuff in there, and I'll let you read through it. But what was disturbing to me was when I had to pull, in my lifetime, every coach, including Doug Barfield, who I don't remember, their first two seasons at Auburn. I'll go through this first, and then I pulled.
Oh, boy.
Then I pulled, before I came in here, not in the article, everyone's last season. And what got them run out of town, or they decided to resign or move on or whatever. But starting with Barfield in 76 and 77, Auburn went 8-14 his first two seasons, 6-6 in conference play. Talked to some old-time Auburn fans, and they're like, defense was his problem, not offense. He went on to be an offensive coordinator at Mississippi State after being fired in 1980. Pat Dye, first two seasons, 14-9, that's solid, 6-6 in the SEC. Terry Bowden, it got exciting then, 21-1 in two seasons, 14-1-1 in SEC play. That's strong. Tommy Tuberville, 14-10, was 500 in SEC play, 8-8 first two seasons. Gene Chizik, 22-5, 11-5 in SEC play his first 2 years, won a natty. Gus Malzahn, 20-7, 11-5 in conference play. Played for a natty. And then here we go.
Here we go.
Brian Harsin, first 2 years at Auburn, 9-12, 4-9 in conference play. You're fired mid-season. Get out. All of that to get to this. In two seasons now, Hugh Freeze is 9-13, and he's 4-10 in conference games with three games left on the year. And like K-Bag said, all three are very losable. ULM, which you would never think that is a solid little football team. Texas A&M at home. Does anybody really believe Auburn's going to get that done when they can't beat a Vandy team? And they can't even score 7 on Vandy, and then you got to go to the Iron Bowl in Tuscaloosa. Hopefully they'll have had a loss by then and just will given up on the season, because if it's not a national championship, they don't care.
Yeah.
But, man, he is 9-13 in 2 years, 4-10 in conference play. It's the worst record of anybody in my lifetime in two seasons at Auburn.
Not even 2 years.
You got it.
Not even 2 years. With two very losable games and one that if you're not careful, they will beat you. That's the problem here. And it goes back to the thing we've talked about week after week after week is, man, what's going to change? Right? What's going to change? And we thought, man, we weren't blowing smoke. We weren't pumping sunshine. Believe me, we don't do this on this program. We really did think, okay, you finally get the win over Kentucky. You finally do what you've been longing to do for so long. You get that win that you needed, right? It's like, okay, here we go. Now let's build on that. Let's do what we did well. Let's carry that into this week, and let's try to beat a team that, talent-wise, you're better than. And you let Diego Pavia come in here again, beat Hugh Freeze again, beat Auburn again, and Auburn embarrasses themselves in front of their home fans again. Right? You're coming off of a long road trip. You haven't played at home in over a month. You got the fans who showed up for an 11:45 kick. Sun was shining, striped the stadium, looked beautiful on TV, right? And here you go, and you embarrass yourselves once again. It's depressing, man. It really is. And I know fans are just so fed up with it and frustrated. Let's see if we got one right here. 334-321-1390. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with?
Hey, this is Dak. Guys, hey. How are y'all doing?
Good, Dak. Good to hear from you, brother. I got about a minute or so for you. We're up against a break.
Yeah, so, you know, I knew the Kentucky win was a smokescreen. I mean, Kentucky's top two running backs didn't play. They would have eat the clock up and done some things offensive they couldn't do against us, you know, with those two running backs. So I knew that was kind of a curveball, making people think something that wasn't there.
Sure.
Bottom line is, guys, we do some great things. Defense is getting better and better and doing some great things. I say it again, this is about the fourth game that a kicker has cost us. I said that on social media, and somebody said, well, the score would have been 17-13. It makes everything different when we go up 10-7. The play calling on both sides of the ball would have been different, and you also could take more chances instead of trying to lose the game. You understand what I'm talking about?
Absolutely.
When it comes to that? And, you know, and Peyton missed two throws, I thought, the one y'all talked about earlier. And then in the fourth quarter when he threw it again to the tight end and they swapped it right when it hit his hands, he was a tad late on both those throws and should have drilled it in there. I do get how when you have two tight ends with different speed, Deal is not near as fast as the other guy, and I get why he led him too far. But on that second throw, he should have drilled it in there instead of lobbing it. That's why it got batted down. But, guys, the kicker is killing us, man. I mean, I hate it that it comes down to that. But to me, there's been three games where, you know, if he makes – I'm not talking about 55-yard field goals, guys. We're talking about, what, 28, two 28-yarders and a 38-yarder and a 42-yarder.
We're talking chip shots.
Yeah, I mean, that kills you.
Absolutely. Spoken like a true coach right there. Dak, hate to cut you off, my brother, but we're up against the top of the hour break. Spoken like a true coach, though, Uncle Tebow. Spoken like a football man. Dak,
boy,
give us a call some more often, man. Always love talking to you.
Yeah, you got to make those field goals. I don't know what's going on with that. I don't understand. You said that several quarterbacks over the time, especially in your time as a fan, have come to Auburn and gotten worse. How in the world did Towns McGoo get so bad? And who's coaching special teams? Because I don't know if you've seen the video, folks, but that last putt by Vandy, the punter still could be running. The coverage was so bad, they just went ahead and kicked it. Special teams at Auburn ain't so special.
Yeah, they may not be winning you games, but Auburn, they're losing you games right now. Hour number one in the books, don't you worry. We got a whole lot more coming up in hour number two. Stick around, it's coming up.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It's the show. It tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Did a lot of that in hour number one. I expect there to be a lot of that here in hour number two. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go back and listen to the podcast. You'll find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. You can also find our SEC Football Challenge on our station website as well, ESPNAU.com. We're going to talk some college football and picks from this past weekend because lots of good games, some crazy results, upset city around college football. So we'll have a lot of that in hour number two, plus more reactions from Auburn and Vanderbilt in this second hour as well. That's what we talked about all of hour number one. Again, so you can go find that in the podcast version of the show. Before we get into content, though, I want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day, here on ESPN during On the Line, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. Phone lines are open yet again here in hour number two. Wide open, no Jacob Hillman today, so it's time for you to give us a call, 334-321-1390, or shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067. Uncle T-Bone, inform the listeners, in case they weren't with us in the first hour, just now getting a chance to tune in on your research that you did, and then you had a little bit more to add on to the end of
it. I took the time over at my website, blog, radiofreeauburn.com, to just discuss the uncharted water that this coaching staff has entered record-wise, starting with their first two seasons, and Hugh Freeze and staff have not even finished their second season, so they can improve, but they can definitely get worse. And no coach in my lifetime, including Doug Barfield, who everyone's made fun of for years, has ever done worse than this current coaching staff win-loss record at this point. Hugh Freeze is 9-13, 4-10 in conference games. Jacob, that's horrible.
In conference games. And who are those wins over? That is Kentucky.
They got Kentucky, Vandy, Mississippi State, and Arkansas. Arkansas was left for dead last year. Mississippi State was no good, and Vandy wasn't either. Two of those three teams decided to go out and get better, and two of those three teams, one of them, which Auburn won't play, is Mississippi State, can't beat Auburn this year, and didn't even beat them, came over to Jordan-Hare Stadium up into your own house and took your manhood.
Yeah.
I mean, golly, what are we doing? I mean, you keep talking about some other numbers. Here's some numbers for you, Jacob. Doug Barfield's last season, 1980, went 5-6, fired. Pat Dye's last season, 1992, 5-5-1, he resigned. Terry Bowden, 1998, didn't even make it through his last season. He quit, 1-5, probably would have been fired. Tommy Tuberville, 2008, last season, 5-7, gone. Gene Chizik, 2012, last season, 3-9, bye. Gus Malzahn, the only outlier here of coaches that left Auburn in my lifetime in their last season with a winning record, and he was 6-4. That was in 2020. Brian Harsin didn't make it through a whole season. 2022, 3-5, fired. What is Auburn's record right now?
Auburn is 3-6 right now.
Now, I'm not saying that anything's going to happen to Hugh Freeze, but if you just take a look at those numbers, they average out to only four wins in the last season of every Auburn coach in my lifetime.
Ooh.
He better get to four.
Oh, he's going to be scrapping for that. That UL Monroe team that's coming to town ain't bad. That UL Monroe team's got more wins than Auburn
so
does.
So we're in choppy waters there, uncharted waters in his first two seasons. He's the worst coach record-wise so far in his tenure in two seasons in my lifetime for any Auburn football coach.
Golly.
Yeah, it gives you a migraine.
Yeah, it does. I had plenty of that this weekend. And
this season right here is trending towards just about at best most last year seasons for Auburn coaches in my lifetime when they leave. Man, I forgot how bad some of these records were. We've been through a lot, Auburn fans. I feel your pain. Terry Bowden, 1998. Loser! Gene Chizik. Tommy Tuberville, 5-7, 3-9. I mean, make it stop! Calgon, take me away!
Speaking of ULM, kick time for next Saturday, 11:45 a.m. inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium. Over under.
What is that on PBS Plus?
Over under 60,000 fans inside those walls.
Mm.
Over under 60,000 fans in the stands.
I know one of them who won't be there.
I know quite a few of them that won't be there, according to the phone calls we've had today.
11:45 again, man. That's what we get. That's what we deserve, but that's what we get. Why can't we get better start times occasionally?
You got to win.
What time is Texas A&M going to be? 2 in the morning?
I don't know. Well, especially since they lost. Yeah, it may not be as good as we thought it was going to be.
When's the last time we had an SEC night game at home?
Not this season, obviously. I mean, the A&M game was going to be really your only good shot at getting a home night game, and that
I don't think they had one happening. Last year.
Oh, goodness, I don't know. I'd have to really think about it.
Texas A&M when Cornell Williams took the realm?
I'm sure there was one. I just can't remember what it is.
I don't think there was one last year.
Hmm.
Georgia and Alabama were both during the day.
Yeah, as they typically are.
Ole Miss was a night game last year.
There you go. 334-321-1390. Let's get to the phone lines. You're on the line. Who are we speaking with?
Hey, Spectre again.
What's up, Spectre?
Well, listen to what you had to say, and boy, you've been doing your homework. But I will say, if we beat ULM, I said if, he won't be fired, and that's because of one reason.
Money.
His recruiting class.
Oh.
Yeah.
If he's fired, his recruiting class is gone.
Well, I agree with that.
And that's no guarantee.
There's no guarantee that if he stays that they stay. Or, you know, and I'm not saying he needs to be let go, but you're right. The only thing that's keeping Hugh Freeze afloat at Auburn right now is recruiting. That is the only thing. And that's just as honest as I can be. And that might be the only thing that matters ultimately. Some people have been telling me all weekend, he's building it up the right way. Just give him time. This is all an anomaly. It really doesn't matter right now, blah, blah, blah. You know, tell that to the folks that go like Lonnie from Lochipoca who spend $400 or $500 to go to a game. Hell, yeah, it matters right now. Everything matters. The best way to build a foundation is to win. What do you think Shane Beamer's doing over at South Carolina, Spectre?
Yep, that's right.
He's not complaining about having a lack of talent. He goes out there and he hustles and he busts his ass and he does his job to the best of his ability and makes no excuses.
Well, you know.
And that sounds like the Auburn way to me, or at least that's what it used to be.
Yeah, if he loses ULM, you know, like I said, I don't think there's a guarantee that recruits will stay.
Well, let's talk about the what-if game. Spectre, thank you for the call. Jacob, your favorite game. Your favorite game in the whole wide world. Not Twister, not Monopoly. The what-if game.
The what-if game.
What if we lose to ULM in 2 weeks?
Is that grounds?
Coming off a bye week.
Is that grounds to be fired right then and there?
At home. Is it unrealistic to say that that's a possibility?
To 2 years in a row, at the end of the year, you come home and you lose to a game outside of a Power Four conference. You lose to a team that you're favored by 20-plus.
That would be a lot like that New Mexico State game last year.
Yeah, but I think this would be worse because you at least had a little something going in the New Mexico State at that time last year, did you not? This is in the midst of...
I don't know. That game really blindsided me.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Last year, New Mexico State was a blindside. Like, nobody was ready for that. Nobody was expecting
I'm
that.
Preparing myself for 2 weeks from now.
That's the problem. That's the issue, is Auburn goes into this game in 2 weeks against ULM, and if they lose, yeah, it's going to be disappointing. It's going to be sickening. It's going to be heartbreaking. But guess what? The majority of fans, I have a feeling, just from our conversations today and the ones I had late this weekend, it wouldn't be out of the realm of their thoughts, right? It wouldn't be.
No, there's plenty of people preparing for it right now.
And that's a major issue. Say that again.
There's plenty of people preparing for ULM to beat us in 2 weeks that are Auburn fans right now. I know them.
Isn't that a problem? Shouldn't that be the alarm that's sounding in the building right now at Auburn football?
It better not happen.
Is that grounds to be fired?
I will say, I think people, if that were to occur on a bye week, after a bye week, at home, after what we've been through the last 5 years, I think Auburn fans will get the pitchforks and torches out, and they won't care who ponied up the money to get Peyton Thorne, NIL recruits, who's really running this program. It'll be one of those moments like there have been a few times in my lifetime where the fans say enough is enough, and we're marching on Sanford Hall, and if anybody's in our way, we're gonna stick a pitchfork in you. I'm serious. I think that there would be such an uproar, such a groundswell of pure anger at that possibility that it would be one of those times where they finally said, hey, we might want to, you know, for us to survive, somebody's going to have to get thrown to the wolves.
See what I'm saying?
And I don't think firing an offensive coordinator is going to get that done.
Well, you know, listen, man.
Even if Auburn were to lose this game, again, to ULM, if it's a 17-7 score, like where the defense does its job and Auburn plays okay, but the offense craps out and they can't score.
The only way that Auburn's going to turn any bit of this season around, I think, is if somebody has a massive ego check, licks the toad, sees the truth, says what we're doing offensively is not working, and in this off week pulls what Tommy Tuberville did. I brought up a lot of data. I'm bringing it in this article in 2003 when Auburn was preseason numero uno, and they replaced Bobby Petrino at offensive coordinator with Hugh Knoll, thinking if they kept that same system going that he understood it well enough, it would do right by offense. It did not. Mid-season, Tuberville had enough guts and enough ego check in him, like a true pro, like a true leader. He was self-evaluated and went out and got a consultant in Steve Ensminger. You remember it, Auburn fans. Y'all called it Knowles-Minger. But the season got better offensively once that happened, and they saved Tuberville's job with a W against Alabama in the Iron Bowl. Go crazy, Cadillac year. Go crazy. There is enough time in this off week to bring somebody here who may or may not be locally, and I don't know if he is, but K-Bag saw him Saturday night after game, and that's one Al Borges, and just bring him in or somebody as an ex-offensive coordinator, as a consultant, just to take a quick look at what we're doing and tell us how we can do better this season so these people get off my back.
Speaking of Lonnie, he texted in and says, the Auburn-ULM line will be Auburn minus three.
What?
Somebody else texted in and says, last two coaches who lost to Vandy were fired. That was the alarm.
Hugh Freeze is 3-3 against Vandy in his SEC career, by the way, going back to Ole Miss.
Another question from the text box. Is there any more sympathy for Freeze simply because of the team he took over with rather than Harsin? Is there any more sympathy?
Not for me. There are for a few Auburn fans who are diehards and believe in that Freeze is doing right and that recruiting will save all. I'm of the camp that the game's changed, and at this point in his career at Auburn, it'd be like Kamala Harris trying to come out tomorrow on Election Day and saying it was all Donald Trump's fault with inflation the last 4 years. It's your regime. It's your job. The buck stops with you. You're the one making $6 million a year. You only scored 7 points against Vandy, and your offense sucks, and you're supposed to be the offensive guy. Deal with it. Don't quit blaming other people.
And that's the concern that I have here is – Auburn hired Hugh Freeze because of the offensive mindset that he has, right? Of the offensive game plan. And look, he's turned into, and he has been, but he has become such a good recruiter here at Auburn. But, man, you can recruit as many good players as you want to, but if you don't have the scheme and the execution to deliver, then it doesn't matter. Ask Jimbo Fisher. Look at Jimbo Fisher. This is a much more exaggerated scale, but Jimbo Fisher's the prime example of that. He had some of the best recruiting classes in the history of college football, and yet he's sitting on a beach somewhere because he got fired.
Do you think that Gus Malzahn 10, 15 years ago was on the cutting edge of offenses in college football? I do.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's how he got to where he is.
That's how he made it to a national championship
game. He can't replicate it again.
And look at what
UCF's he's still trying to do the same things he was doing back then. I think Hugh Freeze in that same boat. I think Urban Meyer is a perfect example of this. 20 years ago, he was on the cutting edge of offense in football. I'm not sure what he does now he could replicate offensively, because if he could, I believe he'd still be coaching. He's too valuable of a head coach. At some point, I think that Hugh Freeze is going to have to realize offensively what I used to do may not necessarily work now. Obviously, it's not last year. They made a change. They've gone down 8 points per game on average against Power Four teams after making that change. Let's get some consultants in here and let's salvage what we can of this season, especially playing the younger guys on offense. Go out and prove to recruits that we're going to improve offensively by going out and doing a nationwide search, which several people have done in Auburn in their lifetimes. They pivoted what they were doing offensively and then went in a different direction, and it worked. Tommy Tuberville, perfect example. He did it multiple times. You know, Pat Dye was running the wishbone up until 1985.
it started becoming outdated. He made a change. Guess what? Nick Saban changed his offense a couple of times from LSU to Alabama when he retired.
Yeah.
It's okay to say what we're doing's not working. Let's make some changes and let's figure it out. I don't think that we're doing that. And I don't think if Auburn doesn't go out and get a true blue offensive coordinator and Hugh Freeze turn the offense over to him to mesh what he thinks should happen philosophically best on the cutting edge of college football offenses today with the personnel that you have here on campus now to be successful and takes a more CEO-like approach, then I don't think it'll be successful at Auburn. That's what I think the answer is. Do it and do it today.
334-331-1390 is the number to get you through to us. We want to hear your thoughts here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
We said something. Phone line looking like a Christmas tree. We smoked them out, I guess. 334-321-1390. We'll start with John in Auburn. You're on the line, man. What's up?
Hey, guys. I was going to kind of echo what Uncle T had said. I think we need a spark. I'm not for a head coaching change, and I think there's very little chance of Freeze getting fired at 4-8 at the end of the season. What I will say is that I think we need to have, you know, kind of like Cadillac did 2 years ago at A&M or at home against A&M. We need a moment. We need a spark, and I don't think it can come from Hugh Freeze. Is it Marcus Davis? Which one of those assistants can step up, and there's a lot of guys on that staff with Auburn ties, and say, hey, look, this isn't acceptable, and we're moving forward. There needs to be something there. And just one last comment.
Could they get Will Friend back to call plays?
Right, exactly. Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, I don't know. and then the other point I had was that I was watching that South Carolina game. If you're a 16, 17-year-old high school recruit, Auburn and South Carolina's histories are very similar. Williams-Brice has a better atmosphere than we do right now.
Ain't no doubt about it.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, appreciate the call. I'm glad you brought that up, too, because we're going to talk about college football results, and that's the one that I'm going to highlight is South Carolina. To his point, though, very quickly, it's unfortunate because I was hoping it didn't take any particular person to bring that spark back to Auburn. I was hoping just a few wins back-to-back was going to bring that spark back to Auburn. And as crazy as it sounded, right, we talked about this late last week and even Saturday morning on Game Day on Wings, a win over Vanderbilt would have gone a long way for this program, a long way for this team and this program because of who that team is, who their quarterback is, and how they're one of the biggest stories in college football. That could have been the moment where you turned it around and everything was still in front of you. 7-5. Auburn could go 7-5. Yeah, okay. Well, we fooled ourselves again. Good job, guys. And I'm talking about us. So that was the moment that could have been. But to John's point, for anybody that watched that game on Saturday night where the top 10 team in the country, Texas A&M, went down to Columbia, South Carolina and took on a feisty Gamecocks team, a team with a head coach that most people had already given up on before this season started and said, oh, he's toast. He's done. There's no way. Ain't no way Shane Beamer can turn that thing around and survive this year. Man, that was one of the greatest atmospheres I've seen all season long. And South Carolina went out there and punched Texas A&M in the mouth for four quarters and flat out beat them in a really, really good college football game, 44-20, and they looked really, really good doing it. And now South Carolina, sitting at 5-3 overall this season, has everything in front of them to have a really, really good football year. Vanderbilt, Missouri, Wofford, and Clemson is on their remaining schedule. And sure, it's taken Shane Beamer a couple of years, and that'll feed into the give patience crowd. But man, he also just started winning with what he had, and the culture there is unparalleled. Did you see the post-game locker room video? Did you see this?
Oh, yeah.
Of where his wife, Shane Beamer's wife, was in the locker room, and he said, her birthday's coming up, And I told her that if we won, we'd celebrate together as a team. And he said, you guys sing this song all the time. I'm going to need your help. Hit it, DJ. And they just start going crazy, man. They all are bought in. They're singing. They're dancing. They're vibing. They're singing happy birthday to the coach's wife. I mean,
winning's fun.
Yeah, winning's fun.
Have we forgotten that on the plane?
They have a winning culture in South Carolina because they believed they could do it, and they did it. Auburn doesn't have that. Auburn's scared. Auburn can't. Auburn has no concept of what it takes to win football games. And now we're lower than Vanderbilt in South Carolina. We're in the talks and likes of Kentucky, who's about to fire Stoops after they thought they'd never do it, and Mississippi State, who has two wins on the year. We're in the same conversation as those programs, and we're looking up on all the others.
Shane Beamer came to South Carolina in 2021. He inherited a program in disarray. 7-6, 3-5 in the SEC. Second year, 8-5, 4-4. I believe he got Auburn that year. 2023, he took a step back. That was last year, 5-7, 3-5 in the SEC. But you know what? He built up some equity early on in the first 2 years. That is very important for any new football coach. You can see it statistically in the Auburn coaches that I laid out in my lifetime. The ones who didn't build up equity in the first couple of years with a winning record didn't make it very long.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that did got mulligans. Now this year they're sitting at 5-3, 3-3 in the SEC. And you said it, everything's in front of them. Everything's in front of them. He's taking his team on the road in the SEC and kicking butt. Saw what he did to Oklahoma. They got Vanderbilt at Vandy this weekend. That'll be a rock fight game. That's two really gritty teams.
Yeah, that's a really good
game.
But
if they get past that, they got Missouri at home. They'll take care of them. Wofford at home. And then they go to Clemson. Clemson is on the ropes after that embarrassing performance at home against Louisville.
That was terrible.
Disgusting.
Oh, I just got a text about South Carolina and says
they're going to be 9-3 looking to go to a big time bowl.
Yeah, they had their college football playoff hopes shattered by the Cards this weekend.
Let me tell you what, if South Carolina pulls off, and I know it's a big what if, at Alabama, they're in the playoff. College football playoff hunt.
Well, that's what this text says right here. They're a two-point conversion against Bama and two bad penalty calls from LSU being 7-1. 7-1 South Carolina year three.
Other than Lenora Sellers, name another big-time player on that team.
They got some studs on that defense.
I mean, I know they do, but name them.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't.
Exactly.
They're just like a no-name team. They've bought in. They have a culture. They have a coach who has confidence in his players, who has his players back, you know, who's coaching them every day as hard as he possibly can, is not making excuses for talent, not sending people out there to say, just hang on with us, we're recruiting well. I know that we're recruiting well, but it's not working on the field. Shane Beamer has his team working on the field, working hard.
And getting results.
You know, he's leading from the front. He's laying it on the line for that program. That's what Auburn expects and deserves. Those fans over in South Carolina are super loyal fans and good ones. Like Auburn fans, one program's heading in the right direction on the field, one's not.
Prime example of how it can be done in college football. We'll talk about some more results, plus get to the phone lines. All that's coming up here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Give us a call, 334-321-1390.
Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goetz. He is Uncle T-Bone. Let's get to the phone lines before we start talking some more college football. 334-321-1390. Pitmaster, happy Monday, brother. What's on your mind?
Not a whole lot. T-Bone, I'm teeing you up right here. I got one thing to say. Houston, we have a problem. We're
I mean, how many comments have I fielded? Thank you, Pitmaster, for your time and call. Like that over the weekend, I would say 90% of the people I spoke with this weekend post-game on Saturday, wee into the hours, and just about all day Sunday when I had time to speak, and today and this morning with them, echo that sentiment. They're not trusting the process. And I don't blame anyone for that. How can you when you see just statistically scoring average alone, like from the Phillip Montgomery who caught all the crud in the world.
Yeah, he did.
And our team is averaging 8 points less against Power Four teams in regular season thus far this season, with the head coach stepping in and being a bigger part of the offense, and you have a quarterback who went through a spring this time and has been here 2 years. You have a better offensive line, or at least you should have. You have, remember, the weapons we're going to put around him on the outside, and they did and never utilized properly.
We've given him all the tools to be successful.
You've got a stable of running backs who returned, who's one of the better stable of running backs in the SEC, and despite the fact that they were crowding the line and box and we couldn't run the 20 times the tailbacks got the carry, they got 97 yards. That's a pretty good average. I think I'd have tried to make it 40. And not to mention you got one of the best defenses in the SEC. I know not statistically, but what they're doing under the gun that they are.
They're one of the best defenses in the
SEC. They're one of the best.
You're right.
And if they had an offense that was worth a crud helping them, they might be one of the best defenses in the country.
I think they'd be top 10. I really do. I think, and this goes back to what I said at the very beginning of the year. I said Auburn's defense will be solid, and it will be good enough to keep Auburn in games. I said that, did I not? I said that they would be good enough to keep Auburn in games. It would be up to the offense to go and win it for them. And here we are. Auburn's offense has yet to go and win them a game. Yet to go win them a game. Jarquez Hunter won the game against Kentucky. The offense did not do that. Jarquez Hunter did that. But the offense has yet to go and win you a game. And this text message right here, again, this is the On the Line text box, 334-784-1067. Says Clark Lee is a much better coach than Hugh Freeze. Think about that. Clark Lee is a much better coach than Hugh Freeze. And I think if you start going around the SEC and you start asking yourself who's doing a better coaching job this season, who's done a better job around the SEC coaching their team this season than Hugh Freeze, there's a lot more than less names on there. I can guarantee you that. There's a lot more names on that list than you'd feel comfortable admitting to, I bet. Right? How about Billy Napier at Florida? Do you think he's done a better job coaching his team than Hugh Freeze has at Auburn? I say he has.
Barely, yes.
But he has, because Florida's exceeded expectations. They've got 4 wins on the year. They have more wins than Auburn does. They hung with Georgia.
And a much tougher schedule.
Right? I'm not even counting the big dogs. I'm not even talking Kirby Smart or Steve Sarkisian. Or even Kalen DeBoer. I'm not talking about those guys. Or even Lane Kiffin. We're talking about the Shane Beamers of the world and the Clark Lees of the world. Right? We're talking about, what about a Brent Venables?
Well, I mean, you said what you did, you know, about this. I've said it for quite some time. Be prepared, college football fans, all the changes in college football. The coaching tree is turning over age-wise. And the one thing common between Clark Lee and Shane Beamer is they're from a younger generation. And I just think that they've spent more time but I don't know. It just seems like the coaching tree will get younger.
I wonder if they relate better.
And that, yeah, there's something that I'm missing there. I can't statistically put my finger on, but it's coming. These older coaches are aging out. They've made a lot of money. They don't have to hang around as long, and they don't want to put up with the NIL crap as much and everything else that it takes in a program, other than just going out to the ballpark and being like the old ball coach, and shucks, let's draw up some plays and throw a visor around.
Let's take a sidestep here because I do want to talk about what happened to college football this weekend outside of Auburn and Vanderbilt, because some really, really big games and big results, right? You had the number one team in the country, Oregon. They pulled away from Michigan as the game went on, but Michigan gave them a little bit better fight than I thought they would. Georgia had to fight off Florida, who lost their quarterback again. I mean, Florida's just dealt with a ton of injuries down there too, but man, the more I watch Florida, and the more that I watch Billy Napier and I listen to this guy talk, and I just see the way he coaches and the way he has his emotions, like, this dude is built for Florida. Like, he just comes off as a Florida coach to me and wants to be there, wants them to be successful. Whether that works or not, I don't know, but I'm a Billy Napier believer. I think it can happen down there. They give Georgia all they wanted. How about the ugliness of Ohio State, Penn State, man? Did you watch this game Saturday morning, T-Bone?
Saw a good bit of it. Was with the pitmaster and a few other folks enjoying some cold snackers, watching multiple games at the same time. Ohio State fan who's local here, was watching that game especially. I saw a good bit of it, man. Penn State had their opportunities and they blew it.
Again. I chose Ohio State Saturday morning. Why? Because Penn State has yet to prove it to me that they can do
it. They blew it, man. They just blew it right there at the end of the first half with that weird interception throw into the end zone, and after that you just knew. It's almost like when I had an Auburn fan tell me when Peyton Thorne missed Luke Deal with that pass that we were done.
Yep.
And you can just feel these. We're in such a negative momentum cycle, and that's how Penn State is with Ohio State, that, you know, just one small little bad thing goes wrong and it's over.
Mm-hmm. I think for Penn State, when you look at the rest of their schedule, they play Washington, Purdue, Minnesota, and Maryland. I don't think they should be a playoff team. I really, really
don't. I don't think they'll beat Minnesota.
They may not. Minnesota got a big win this week.
Minnesota has gotten it together. They had a couple of early season losses. They have a massive offensive line, and P.J. Fleck can coach.
I told you this was a game he could probably win. I only picked Illinois because it was in Illinois.
No, I had Minnesota the
you
whole
did.
Way there.
Yeah, you did, and that's a classic P.J. Fleck win. Minnesota takes down number 24, Illinois, 25-17. Army rolls over Air Force. We mentioned this game earlier.
Well, they struggled with Air Force there for a
while. Yeah, they
minute.
Did. That was a close game. That was a 6-3. Score at the half, and Army had to score twice in the second half to pull away there. We mentioned this one earlier. Ole Miss smacked around Arkansas.
Now there's one I missed, and I missed bigly.
Yeah.
That's the second time, and it's funny, it's between the two teams that had a heck of a shootout down in Baton Rouge that LSU went up into Fayetteville and smacked around Arkansas, then Ole Miss did the same. That was a nice win for Lane Kiffin. He needed it. We'll find out. This is a program-defining game for Ole Miss this Saturday when they host Georgia. If he doesn't get over Georgia here, Lane Kiffin will never get over anybody and into championship contention at Ole Miss.
Wow. It sounds like a bold take, but I don't think it's all that bold. I really don't. I mean, they win this game.
There's a trust factor that will remain with him for the rest of his career at Oxford. But if he blows another golden opportunity, and this is a golden one for Ole Miss hosting Georgia this weekend, if Kirby Smart goes in there and shuts his offense down, Lane Kiffin will not have any trust equity left over in Oxford. And it's just going to be, let's start enjoying the party again, and we'll win that instead of the ball games.
Ole Miss dropped 63 on the head of Arkansas. How about SMU dropping 48 on Pitt?
Loved it. Called
it. Crazy. You
did.
SMU's
red hot. Rhett Lashley has done a heck of a job out there. Obviously, you know, with his connections here to Auburn, people throw his name around. SMU, if you look at the remainder of their schedule, is cruising towards an ACC championship berth, but they got a funny game at the end of the season at California. I'm sure my friend Dan will have some thoughts on that.
I'm sure he will. And speaking of the ACC, another game we mentioned earlier, Clemson fumbles the bag against Louisville at home.
This is the beginning of the end for Dabo Swinney.
They're going to miss the playoffs.
This is the beginning of the end because of his attitude on NIL and his pontifications on all the woes of college football. And instead of embracing opportunity that was available to Clemson, he shunned it. And this is an easy schedule that he's had this entire season, except for when they went against Georgia to start the season. And he just got exposed terribly by Louisville.
some upsets around college football this weekend. That was one of them, Louisville taking down Clemson. How about Houston taking down number 17, Kansas State? They're done.
They're done.
Texas Tech takes down Iowa State in the Big 12. And then South Carolina taking down Texas A&M, a couple of teams that were able to get a win and or survive. Miami takes down Duke in what was a close game to start, and Miami really showed their offensive muscles there late in the second
and
half.
And Cam Warren has decided he's going to probably win the Heisman.
I mean, he's good. He's good. Glad Auburn did go get him, though. That's
well,
good.
We just weren't going to pay $1.5 million for a quarterback. Just not worth it, Jake.
No, not worth it. No, not worth it. I'd hate to be, 9-0, number 5 in the country, and surging towards a playoff. That would suck. Tennessee takes down Kentucky 28-18. Tennessee, they just keep doing enough. They do just enough
to
get by.
They just didn't look good. They're not going to make it. Let me look at the rest of their schedule.
They play Mississippi State.
That's a W.
Georgia.
L.
In Athens.
Uh-huh.
UTEP and at Vandy.
Man, Tennessee, I think, would have to be in the SEC championship game. I think they're going to – if they don't beat Georgia, they're going to have to win the SEC to get in because they have – Rocky Top has looked rocky several times
this
year.
They have, but here's the thing. They have three top 25 wins at the time that they played them, NC State, Oklahoma, and Alabama. They were all top 25 teams when they played them and beat them. Three top 25 wins. There aren't many teams in college football that could say that.
Yeah, well, we'll see what Bama does this weekend. That win over them could be a lot better. Bama comes out as a three-point favorite in Baton Rouge for this Saturday night.
How about the biggest story in college football? The Indiana Hoosiers continue to roll. They were favored by
a
touchdown.
What are they ranked in the AP?
They're number 8 now.
That's ridiculous. Give the guys some respect.
I agree, man.
They'll get some respect this weekend when they beat Michigan.
They're favored to beat Michigan. Not only favored to beat them, believe they're favored by double digits.
Is that
game Michigan.
In Bloomington?
Of course it
They'll
is.
Run them out of that stadium.
I think they will. They'll drop 50
And
on
everyone
them.
Will finally give them the credit because Michigan's such a blue blood name, but that Wolverine team stinks.
I think Indiana, I have to look it up. I think they're favored by double digits for the first time in probably ever. But yeah, Indiana favored by a touchdown against Michigan State. They beat them 47-10 after going down 10-0 against Michigan State. They were down 10-0 and scored 47 straight to beat them. On the road in East Lansing.
On the road. Man, get
Indiana's
you some of that.
Legit.
Two words, Jacob.
Kurt Cignetti.
That's what a texter said earlier. Not Uncle T.
Go smoke a pack of cigs for Kurt Cignetti. He's got Bloomington lit up right now. Yeah, this person says Michigan may miss out on a bowl game.
Boise State continues to roll on. They're trending towards a college football playoff berth. That schedule sets up well for them. Army will have its opportunity, I'll say that.
Yeah.
They'll probably get a W this weekend, and then next weekend they travel to Notre Dame, and they'll try and prove that Notre Dame is a fraud, unlike their cousins at Navy could not do.
Yeah, Army was able to avoid that this past weekend. So, again, another weekend of college football that didn't look overly attractive that became one of the most fascinating ones so far.
Well, there's Notre Dame sitting. What are they at about? They're in the top 10, correct? I haven't seen the AP top 25.
The newest AP poll came out today. We'll look at that really quick before we get to a break.
I got them number 9 in the local ESPN 106.7
poll. Yeah, they're number
10 poll.
In the AP poll.
So they're on a bye, and they'll host Florida State this weekend. That'll be a bloodbath. I think they're already like a 27-point favorite. So, look at the remainder of their schedule. That is a team also cruising towards an easy college football playoff pathway.
Here's the top 15 before we get to break. Oregon 1, Georgia 2, Ohio State 3 after their win over Penn State. Miami 4, Texas 5, Penn State 6, Tennessee 7, Indiana 8, BYU 9, Notre Dame at 10.
Penn State at 6. That's a joke.
That is a joke. I agree. That is a joke. Yeah, yes, you lost to a top 5 team.
Joke.
But you were at home.
At home.
And you've done nothing outside of that game. Nothing.
Yeah, that's they're ranked way too high. Go ahead with the rest of it.
Bama 11, Boise State 12, SMU 13, LSU 14, Texas A&M 15. So a top 15 matchup this weekend in Baton Rouge, Alabama and LSU.
You know, up until this week, it's just been a really murky pond to determine the possible 12 teams. In totality, because there were so many teams that were still available, but it's beginning to work its way out, Jacob, and they'll take another big step with that this weekend when LSU hosts Alabama, Georgia hosting Ole Miss. Several teams will continue to fall off each week, and I bet
it's going to work itself out for the most part by the end of the season.
And you know what game's coming up in the Big Ten that's going to make some huge waves in that conference? Indiana and Ohio State coming up on the 23rd. That game is in Columbus, where the Indiana will travel to Ohio State, where the Hoosiers take on the Buckeyes.
They don't have divisions anymore in the Big Ten, do they? Mm-hmm. So it's just like everybody else, the top two teams.
Yep.
That could be – no, you got to – I forget you got Oregon out there.
Yeah.
Indiana can afford a loss there.
See, I don't know if they can.
They can afford a loss there and be a one-loss team and win out.
Problem is they don't have any other good wins on their schedule. Everybody they've beat is like Maryland and Michigan State and Michigan. If they
what
win,
if it's
know what,
a, what if it's a close loss like against Ohio State?
Like a one-score loss?
Yeah.
I think possibly. I think they could then be the beneficiary of not playing in the Big Ten championship game and still getting into the playoffs.
Look, I know we got to take a break, but before that, this is a team that's just getting kind of whipped brand-wise because football-wise, it's always been a basketball school.
Yeah.
If you have not watched Indiana play,
go do it.
They are exciting. And they play
good.
A physical, fast brand of football. And now I can see why Juju Smith has considered them as a possibility to go and play quarterback there.
He'll be on campus this weekend for Indiana when they host Michigan.
He'd be better off there than USC with Kurt Cignetti.
I think so, too.
The question is, how long will Kurt Cignetti be in Indiana?
334-321-1390. We got to take our final break. We'll come back and wrap it all up here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a fun show. Circumstances are unfortunate, and what's really unfortunate is they've been common circumstances for quite some time this season. But we do appreciate everybody being here and being a part of the show and tuning in and calling and texting and just all the things that you're able to do to support this show. So we really do appreciate you and looking forward to an exciting week here of On the Line because – well, it may be the bye week for Auburn football. Auburn basketball starts this week.
Yes,
how about
does.
That? Auburn basketball gets underway this week. Men's and women's basketball. More on that in a moment. But the men's team, they get started on Wednesday against a scrappy Vermont team. And then they head out on the road as they take on Houston in what's going to be a top 15 matchup in college basketball. Really looking forward to that on Saturday night there in Houston. Not technically a road game. It's technically neutral site, but they're playing at the Toyota Center in downtown Houston, Texas.
Yeah, boy,
we sure
owe Houston one from the tournament a few years back.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Can on us. Real quick announcement too, Jacob. Tomorrow is a huge day for this country. I know this isn't a political show, but I will be on helping out, and you will be too. You'll be on remote,
yeah,
getting interviews over at the Lee County Courthouse or wherever it is they count votes. And I'll be in studio with Ben Taylor and Riley Hubbard for special election night coverage, 7 to 10 o'clock.
Yep. News
Get
Talk,
that
WANI.
Brewing, baby. I'll need it, but on WANI. So please join us for that, too. It's going to be a lot of fun. We'll have some insights. Uncle T's going to bring some election insights to you. Been through several of them in my lifetime, as many as Auburn football.
Oh, goodness. 98.7 FM, 1400 AM tomorrow night after the city council meeting on News Talk WANI. And I, so yes, our 2024 election coverage special, three or four local races that you guys will be keeping track of, and then of course the national elections. And not to be political, but go vote. I don't care who you vote for. I don't care if you write somebody in. Go vote. Exercise your right to vote in this country. I think that's a huge,
Well said.
Benefit of what we get to do here. So do that. That is tomorrow night. And back to basketball for a second. You can catch all of the Auburn men's basketball broadcast, the radio calls on Wings 94.3, WingsFM.com, and the Radio Alabama app. And for Auburn women's basketball, we had the exhibition last week, and the season opener is tonight. You can catch that right here on ESPN 106.7 for Auburn women's basketball, the new home of Auburn women's basketball. Britt Bowen, Dr. Larry DeShera will be on the call tonight here
Larry
on,
D.
That's right. That's right. Right here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, continuing all of our wonderful coverage here locally as Auburn women's basketball gets the season started. 5:45 pregame tip-off is at 6 o'clock as the Lady Tigers open up with Southern Illinois. So the drive will end a few minutes early today, and we'll have Auburn women's basketball right here on ESPN 106.7. Rest of the week, we'll have Kristen Griffin in here tomorrow and on Wednesday, since there's no Daryl Dapperts this week. Thursday will be loaded, and then free-for-all Friday, where I have a lot of basketball talk this week since the season gets started. We'll have great basketball games starting tonight. There's men's games starting tonight, too. A top 10 matchup between, Baylor and Gonzaga tonight, I think is what I read. So, awesome, man. I love it. Basketball's here. I've got Auburn High basketball this week before Auburn High football.
Who does Dayton play this week?
Hey, Dayton does play tonight. The Flyers do play tonight. Can I get to it before the music kicks us out of here? Hold on. Hold on, they're not top 25. All right, Dayton Flyers, can I get to it? Can I get to it? Oh, no, probably not. You put me on the spot. They do play tonight, though. Do the Dayton Flyers. Go, go, Dayton Flyers. Yeah, I can't find it.
They probably play like DeQueen or somebody.
It's one of those teams that, you know, you can't pronounce. But either way, Dayton does play tonight.
That's your lead pipe, Uncle T-Bone lock of the night. Dayton minus the whoever they're playing.
Dayton by a million. We love it. Oh, they play St. Francis. I found it. There you go.
No,
St. Francis. He's Uncle T-Bone. I'm Jacob Goins. We got to go. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.